Enter if you dare this ghastly conversation of teens fraught with despair and recent lacerations. Final girl, chase after her, don't let her get away. But first, the Slumber Podcast Massacre.
Welcome to Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA. I'm going to tell you something. That's Tim.
I'm going to tell you something. That's Andy.
And this is a podcast about horror. Every week, Tim and I get together. We talk about a different movie from the horror genre, from your well-known classic, down to that rare gem that's nipples are in its armpits at the back of your video store shelf. This week, as we come ever so close to the end of our never-ending series, Evil Dice Tonight, where random chance picks our film. Last week, the dice picked the 2022 top of the lists of bests of the year, Dutch-Danish collaboration, something or other, from 2022, Speak No Evil. Tim, what's your opinion on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Oh,
no, I'm kidding.
Thank you.
Tim, how long do you think it'd take for you to know someone before you went and like stayed at their house for a weekend?
Well, that's a great question. I remember when we were kids that we used to say we had this thing when we were starting to have our sleepovers and we were old enough to do that. And we would say, like, you don't really know somebody until you like have a sleepover with them. You know, like that was our sage advice. So now you're asking me to know that prior to having the sleepover right. with them. So I would say, okay, I'll give you, we're going to stair step this. So let's speak about it in regards to like a relationship. You hear about people all the time, celebrities, like they met each other and then they were engaged like 30 days later yeah. or whatever. You obviously don't know somebody at that point. I'm not even 100% sure that a year is enough time to, and I'm getting to your, to the answer to sure. that. Because I know this isn't exactly what you're asking, but we're going to
dance around. Oh, you're deviating from your normal quick to the point right. banter? Okay.
right. From the charts and graphs that I have over here on the easel. Yes. So a year, like, because we're going to take things to the extreme perspective of talking about like somebody that you would spend the rest of your life with. I don't even think a year is enough time. I think that people have the ability to mask or not even necessarily like in a nefarious sort of way, but I think they have the ability to mask who they are for a good length of time. Because the end goal is that, like, I want to be with this person or I don't want to be perceived as a bad person. And somebody can keep that up for a long time. Now, if you go 2 years, I think that is enough time to be able to say it's been 2 years. It's been two sets of holidays. It's been a long enough time for like something shitty to happen along the way to have to respond to. Because like you could think that you have a nice friend and then all of a sudden they get a flat tire and they're like, fuck, and like set the world on fire
right.
and scream at you and bitch at you or whatever. And then you're like, oh, that's how they handle conflict. Like, you know, extreme situations. They're not good with stress. But it takes getting to that moment to find that out. So you can't find that out in a short couple of days.
Yeah.
But you're not asking that. You're not asking about needing to spend the rest of your life with somebody. You're asking about like long enough to be able to spend the evening with them overnight.
Yeah.
Okay. So
come be a guest in my home.
I'm going to say this. I personally think that is a big step. And Lord knows I have crashed out on some couches and floors of sure. people that I've known for 45 minutes. And so, you know, it's not that I haven't made bad choices here or there. Thankfully, they weren't serial killers. And that's, you know, the reason why this podcast is happening. So that part is good. But I'm going to say this. I'm going to give you a hard and fast figure. I'm kind of thinking about this in like the respect of like making a new friend, which is funny because at our age, you don't do a ton of that on a regular basis. Right. So like, let's say when you meet somebody new at the bar, I'm not even talking about like a romantic interlude. I'm just saying some dude at the bar, you get along, you're talking, the conversation is coming easy. And then he says, spend the night at my house. I mean, it doesn't happen really.
Right. Okay,
I'm working through it. But I mean,
it could be something like I've had like a beach house. You should come up. We'll party for the night or stay the night up there.
Or we both love this band. Let's go see this concert. And then we'll maybe even just like share a hotel room or something like that. I'm going to be honest. I mean, I know that I champion myself as a pretty adventurous person, but that's the shit where I draw the line because I read a lot of true crime. So I'm going to say that I would have to be in hanging out for a couple hours worth presence with somebody, at least probably, six or seven times.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it couldn't just be once or twice. Like, it would have to be like, hey, now we're settled in. When we see each other, we feel comfortable, right? So that's kind of the measure of it. When you first see them, meeting them for the first time, obviously you're both a little uncomfortable. And then maybe it's been a few weeks have passed and you see each other again, you know, a little bit more comfortable this time, but nobody's ready to like, you know, tuck each other in a bed, you know, at night. So I'm going to say it's probably, I'm going to go with a couple months.
Okay.
Assuming that you have some sort of regular interaction.
Yeah.
If I knew somebody for a couple of months, meaning that we've hung out at length for a handful of times, however much exactly that may be, I'm going to say that would be the first time. I like your beach house example because that's like, this is fun, right?
Right.
Like, who doesn't enjoy a beach house?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not being weird.
Right.
So I'm not saying that, like, both of us have our own places that we live, but we should go stay in a hotel room together. Like, that's strange.
Right.
Right? But, like, yeah, come to my beach house. We'll go to the beach. We'll barbecue. We'll play games. We'll, you know, drink. We'll have fun. I'm going to say a couple months.
Okay. Now, let's say conversely, you're the one with like the beach house.
Sure.
Would it take that amount of time still before you invited someone there?
No. All Interestingly, right. No. And that's a great point because
it's your turf.
Yeah. It's my turf. I know I'm not a killer.
Yeah. But now you're inviting a stranger into your home.
Yeah. That's a good point. God dang.
So many serial killers listening like, I almost had Tim. Yeah, I could have just swooped right into his house.
They're like, they had like a check mark of like 1 month and they're down to the last day. And they're like, another fucking month with this guy. So that is so funny that you put it that way, because now my answer reverts back to the opposite thing, which is, I'd probably want to know somebody for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this much, though. I'm a good and bad person to ask this question because, as you know, I love to find out about people. And I can talk about anything with anybody. But I do ask a lot of questions. So you could put me with somebody hanging out at the bar for 2 hours. And I'm going to be able to, of course, tell you their ethnicity. And then also,
because
like,
this is the first question you ask.
Right. Exactly. Walk into the bar with a bullhorn. We'll start with you. But not you. I'm pretty sure. But no, you. No, I don't mean that. But I'm saying like I don't know where that interest comes from. But like I want to know like where you come from. And then where did your parents come from?
Mm-hmm.
And then like, you know, what did they do? What sort of upbringing did you have? What are your likes and dislikes? What are your tastes? So I can mine a lot of information quickly.
Yeah.
And I think people aren't really given that much of an opportunity to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
In an adult world where you don't walk into a classroom and the teacher says like, tell us what you did on your summer vacation. Like nobody does that.
Right.
When you're an adult. So people like to talk about themselves and I like to hear that for whatever reason. It's probably useless to me, but it's not useless because it does come up anecdotally where I can say, hey, I met this guy at the bar. He worked at a prison. Like, let me tell you what he says about what prison life is really like. Like, that's interesting conversation.
I've noticed you love anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, right.
Oh, no matter what everyone says, I met one guy who says the opposite, so it could be either way.
Right, exactly. Or I met one guy who gave me his opinion on that one thing, and that's exactly the only opinion right. that can be had. Yeah. So I like that. So I'm by 2 months, I'm going to know, I'm going to, short of like their innermost secrets or regrets in life, I'm going to know everything about that person.
Yeah.
Probably after like two nights.
Damn.
But that's just because of like, that's what interests me. But you know, here's the thing though. I also don't necessarily like staying over places. I really don't. Like,
yeah.
I've been to like parties where dudes paid money for like a bachelor party or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's a gorgeous fucking beach house that everybody had like 10 dudes had to pay $100 and it was $1,000 a night and it's fucking gorgeous and it's $1 million house. And I'm just like, I kind of want to be home in my own bed.
Yeah.
I'll party all night. But it's like, I just don't want to stay here because I would always
right
have...
Right at the moment I got to chip in, I feel like my bed sounds awesome.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Yeah. Nobody else has given the money yet.
I didn't stay
yeah.
in the house, so I don't see why I got to... just right. kind of visit it.
Yeah. This is true. And...
You're not alone there. I think that's a great strategy.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just here for the camaraderie, right. guys. You know? But no, there isn't, because you know why?
No, I love going home to my own bed. Like, I'm not going to fault you for that at all.
I have a weird, it's not even the going to bed. I have a weird thing with that. I have this weird waking up in the morning. I don't want to call it anxiety, but that's the part I don't like because it's too humanizing for me. It's the same reason I don't eat at parties. Like, I just, like, there's something, like, when I go to a party,
you don't eat
like...
period. I've seen you eat, like, three times in our friendship.
Right, yeah. Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, it is, there's something, like, humanizing and sort of exposing and delicate about it that I just keep that armor up for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So, like, waking up that next morning, I remember when I used to go into Chicago as in my early 20s, and I would wake up before everybody and I would just scour the person's house for like a book to read or something just to like get myself going. Like I just, the idea of like stretching and everybody kind of waking up at the same time and like just being like who they really are, like just really like unsettled me.
See, I like that part. Like the guy sitting there like one eye open and his hair's all fucked up. You're just like, yeah.
Yeah. The worst
Welcome
for me,
to a new day.
The worst for me was like, if you don't know everybody really well and you wake up in the morning and then you all go to breakfast at a restaurant and I'm like nobody pay with a fucking credit card because I can't wait five fucking more minutes to get out of this place. It's very strange. I don't really have a lot of anxiety otherwise, but again, it's that, I don't know, like I'm good with artifice, which is terrible to say, but like, I'm good with like a good time.
Yeah.
Like I'm good at that.
Yeah.
You know, but when it comes to like the reality of like, we all just had breakfast together and we're all kind of waking up, like I don't feel like I'm in my mode, you know? And like, I'm not able to fully like sell my brand. Which is like, I'm going to regret saying all of this.
Oh, no. Anyone who knows you is like, what?
Right.
But wow, I'm really learning a lot about Tim today.
And it's not to say that what I do is false. It's just that like I'm more about the like, I don't know, if I'm going to be, I guess this is kind of getting to the point of your question. In order for me to feel really fully comfortable with somebody,
yeah,
that probably has to be a much longer length of time than 2 months. It's probably closer to years.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm being honest with myself.
Oh, years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because I think, and you know what that comes from? I think it probably comes from a desire to be liked and a desire to like, to be seen as, you know, polished and together. Mm-hmm. And which I don't know, I'm not afraid to admit that. So so yeah, in the spending the night thing with people, like just making plans like that. No, I never even went on like any spring break trips like in high school or anything like that. No, that's Yeah, that's just not my thing.
Wow.
I'd rather.
See, that's
like,
crazy because I'm like the opposite where I feel like I am in, like, bombarded with anxiety, but I like wake up and someone's like, you want to go get breakfast? I'm like, this is my jam.
Yeah, no. I'd rather just stay home and jack off while everybody went to breakfast. And then they come back and I'm in a great mood and everything's fine.
Don't sit there.
Yeah, right, exactly. Or there.
In fact, do we want to go out again?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm ready for this breakfast thing now.
Need some eggs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, to go along with the sperm. But yeah,
it's the loss of protein.
Yeah, there you go.
Call back to one of our friends in high school, Drew, when he learned that every time you ejaculate, you lose the protein of two eggs. So he drew a cartoon of a guy. Yeah.
God,
well,
no,
I don't know if that's true. That was something we heard in, you know, 1993 without the internet.
No wonder.
Where
I'm,
everything's true.
I'm craving meat all the time.
He drew a picture of a guy standing there with his dick in his hand with two eggs on the floor. And he's just like, well, there goes breakfast. So good.
Right. What if you eat two eggs while you jack off? Like,
you
then,
can go all day.
Yeah, right. There you go. So you're saying that you, okay, this is funny because this is opposite. So I like all of, like, I could meet strangers in a bar or house party situation while it's still the festivities in the party, and I could talk to anybody all night long.
Yeah.
But you're saying that you actually, like, settle in when things have sort of like mellowed out and like the playing field is just leveled in the morning.
Maybe it's just, I love breakfast. I love going out for breakfast.
Breakfast food is great.
I fucking love it.
It's great.
And my wife does not like it at all. Like, we go to a breakfast place and she's like, is there a lunch menu here? I'm like, God damn it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, BLTs.
Right. Yeah. Like, I thought you guys were supposed to like foreplay, but yeah, you're just jumping right to lunch. But no, but here's the one thing about breakfast food. Can we? All right. I'm going to settle this right now. I went to Starbucks this morning and I ordered my bacon Gouda, egg and cheese Gouda breakfast sandwich. Cook it open faced so that you might actually fucking touch heat to the bacon, right, that it might experience warmth. And it worked. But what about the places that they go where they send, like, they just send out that plate of just wet fucking potatoes? Shouldn't all hash browns be crispy?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, they should.
Who's giving you wet potatoes?
Everyone, unless you say, like, extra crispy potatoes.
Yeah, there's a place in town we have to be, like, well-done potatoes. But they're, like, cubed.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
That's a little I'm talking about, like, the shredded.
But even,
like,
those, they're still, if they're not done, you're like, ugh. Yeah, like, cold potatoes, no good.
I like when they ask you, do you want, like, what is the difference? It's like, do you want hash browns or
American fries?
Oh, yeah, or home fries or something. Fries, you're like, well, what's the fucking difference? You're not going to cook either one of them. Yeah, but
hash browns or potatoes?
yeah. So I did find a new breakfast place. I recently went to three different establishments, drove to them. Jeez. In town, lines out the door, people waiting out the door. And I'm like, fuck all this. Like, that's just not happening. Drove a city away to Merrillville or Hobart, depending on whatever the fuck is happening in their, like, local politics. But I went to a place called Sophie's.
Uh-huh.
It used to be called Poppin' Fresh way back in the day.
Yeah.
Then it was Baker Square.
Yeah. Now it's Pancake House.
Sophia's or Sophie's or something. And that place, the fucking waitress was so concise that when crispy bacon was ordered, she had two different versions of crispy bacon.
Oh, my God.
She said, do you want it cracker crispy or do you want just like the edges crispy? I'm right. Like, this is a fucking palace. Right. It was gorgeous. And the
you
food
was amazing.
You
want to chew on coal or meat?
And I did go the NAN route. I went lunch. I had soup and sandwich.
Jesus.
The soup was cream of poblano, which I had never had before. Like, basically cream of pepper.
Yeah.
Which was great. And then I had a tuna melt. I get the desire for, like, a really creamy mayonnaise-y tuna melt.
Sure.
Fuck yeah. On the rye. They're like on rye bread. I'm like, this is a question?
Lunch. Like, when we were in school, when they were like, oh, today's lunch, breakfast for lunch. I was like, it's my birthday.
So what's your favorite breakfast food then?
Pancakes.
Really?
Anywhere I go, I have to get at least one pancake to try them out.
Do you? Okay, two questions. Number one, is it plain pancakes or do you go like a blueberry pancake?
I normally do plain.
Okay.
You know, if I find a place, like we had a place here called Jimmy's. Their chocolate chip pancakes ruled, but I know I can't eat those all the time. Like, that's bad to do. I mean, eating a pancake is bad enough, and then you're just going to dump chocolate in it. Not great. But those were really good. They had the best pancakes in town. And now I'm a little worried, because if we can just divert quickly on the Jimmy's, because that building has been empty since, yes, like, COVID. They've been closed.
Yeah. Yes.
But they're also Greek. Like, they would leave for months to go visit family, which is, and it's great. That's part of the fun charm of that, where you're like the anticipation of, ooh, when's Jimmy's open in America?
Right.
Did you hear Jimmy's is open? Ah! So they have had a sign up that says opening soon for nearly a year now.
Yeah. If not longer.
Yeah. I noticed it like in January, I think.
Yeah.
But I also just noticed the giant parking structure being built two blocks from my house. I was like, holy shit, did they do that overnight?
It went up fast.
It did. So now I'm like very reticent and nervous about this Jimmy's opening. Because that, I think we saw a new, like a post on a social media, again, being like, send in your resume. Like, they're like hiring all positions. I'm like, there were three when you were open before, all right? Right, three people worked there. So I'm really worried it's just someone bought the name Jimmy's Cafe and is going to coast on that shit.
I hope not.
Because, I mean, Jimmy's was, listen, food was, in the ratio of speed to where you got it to flavor, off the charts.
Yeah.
You know, not the most elegant bougie breakfast you've ever had, but they fucking nailed the essentials. And it was like they read your mind as you were walking in, because you would order it. She would like walk to the back and then come out with your fucking order. It was amazing.
And you've never known pleasure like being called honey by like a 6-year-old Greek lady.
Oh, yeah.
Like the sweetest woman on the planet. Just feels like the aunt or grandma that you've always wanted to have and or have had the luxury of having. They're absolutely fantastic there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can forgive the cash only. Who gives a shit? As long as I get the experience.
Yeah. And they'll be like, it's fine. Bring it back whenever. Okay.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're all fucking dying over here, by the way. Jimmy's is great. So now here's the thing, though. So you like the pancake, but do you feel the need to offset it with something a little bit more savory, like a bacon or a sausage?
Oh, yeah. I usually get, you know, I like a skillet sometimes. I don't know. It really is. No, I don't really have any other go-to thing. I'll always get a pancake and then whatever kind of catches my mind.
You put syrup on the pancake?
A little bit, but butter? I don't drench it. Yeah.
You put butter?
Enough to like give it some moisture.
My ma used to make pancakes and she'd line it up with like a Motley Crue worthy like line of sugar. Mm. Looked like just like a fucking Vince Neil doing a fat line of blow. Yeah, right? Right down the middle.
It's all your fault.
And then you just roll it up and just crunch. Mm. You just like the sugar will melt into the pancake a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're just eating like a sugar, like it's basically like a sugar dough.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking good.
Damn.
Yeah. It's great. It's great.
Corned beef hash. I will always get that too. Yeah, I love corned beef hash.
I used to.
Because it's always a. What am I going to get? The can that I know is from the can, or are they going to make corned beef hash? Yeah, of course I would. Yeah.
They're both great. Every time that St. Paddy's comes around and I have corned beef and cabbage, every fucking year I say I'm going to invent corned beef gum where you just get that flavor. Because that's the thing about corned beef. It's that fucking flavor.
Sure.
And it's on fire, and I just want to chew that all day long.
Yeah. That would be good.
Yeah. Corned beef gum.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough initial sell, but once you try some, like, yeah.
All right. I feel like we've gotten way off track.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's time to talk about this movie. I put this off long enough.
Yeah. Segue into this, will you?
Oh, I can't. This movie kind of, I don't want to say wrecked me, but really affected me in a, I mean, not a bad way, but let's talk about it.
Okay.
It's Speak No Evil from 2022. Here are the Wikipedia facts of it. It was written by, now please bear with me on some European names here. This is written by Christian and Mads Toftrup, T-A-F-D-R-U-P, Toftrup. And it was directed by Christian Toftrup. It stars Morten Burien, Seidel Siam Kolk, and Feja van Huyt. I think I nailed those. It had a budget of about $3 million, a box office of $600,000, but it was mainly a streaming movie. It was just kind of released in theaters, very limited. It was a Shudder exclusive. Let's do Nan Sum, and then we'll get into the spoilers. Excuse me, I feel like I have to burp, but I can't. Okay, Danish couple Bjorn and Louise are on vacation with their daughter Agnes in Tuscany. There they meet Dutch couple Patrick and Karen and their son Abel, who they learn was born without a tongue. They are immediately smitten by Patrick's friendliness, and the four become fast friends. Weeks later, they receive an invitation from Patrick and Karen to come visit them in their home in the Dutch countryside. Seeing this as an opportunity to step outside their comfort zone, they agree, and soon the families are reunited. Everything goes as well as you would hope, but small aggressions from the host family begin to build up. Patrick tries to get Louise, a vegetarian, to eat meat. Karen swears like a sailor, and worst of all, they seem verbally abusive to their son. After a disastrous dinner where the Dutch couple's tricked into paying and traffic, and Patrick drives drunk, Louise wants to leave, but Patrick and Karen convince them to stay just one more day. Because today is going to be a great day. I love that line. They agree, but as the day continues, more suspicious information is revealed about their host couple that would indicate they are not what they seem, climaxing in Bjorn's discovery of a collection of photographs of families, one featuring Abel and two unknown parents. Realizing that the host couple are serial killers who abduct the children of their victims, it is confirmed when Bjorn finds Abel floating dead in the pool. Now Bjorn must gather his family and get them to safety before it's too late. Can he get out and raise the alarm, or will he and Louise, unfortunately, speak no evil?
Little ditty about Bjorn and Louise. Yeah, so... like, what are we going to call this guy?
Getting hit with rocks while they fall on their knees.
Well done. So, yes.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What are we going to call him? Bjorn? I mean, is there any other better name than Bjorn? Okay. No, this is this is a great movie.
It is a great movie.
We talked about this earlier that... You know, I've lamented the term elevated horror a lot on this show, but the truth of it is that these movies that we see that are made in the last, like, let's say even 5 years, 5 or 6 years, are incredible films. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about, to me, it's enough to call it a horror movie and to talk about it. But if we're really talking about these films like Hereditary, you know, Midsommar. Infinity Pool, this movie, some of the absolute best filmmaking that's happening is happening in horror.
Yeah.
And this is stuff that is just sort of flying under the radar because of what continues to be a sort of, I don't even know if it's a prejudice against the genre, but it's just a sort of like a prejudgment of like, well, yeah, it's a great movie, but it's a horror movie, so we don't really talk about it. And yet there are great, even I'm going to even throw in Pearl and X. Fantastic films, extremely well made with like a lot of like new artistic vision that are blowing the minds of the people that are fans of the genre. But I really feel like there are some films that aren't reaching the general public that really deserve to. And this is one of those.
Yeah.
I always know that I'm watching a really, really good movie when I have little to no viewing notes. When I'm talking about like the size of a belt that somebody's wearing three different times throughout my viewing notes, then I know that we're just talking about a sleazy, fun, goofy slasher. But when I have next to no viewing notes, I know that I was just captivated by a movie.
Yeah.
And I really was captivated by this. I always know that it's a sign of a movie being great when the great things are, we'll just say for lack of a better word, invisible. When the writing is invisible. The writing in this must have been flawless. I don't really know. because I was so captivated by the performances and the progression of the film, I wasn't even paying attention to the writing because it was flowing so naturally. So if I'm not paying attention to it, that must have been, it must have been great.
Yeah.
It must have been so natural that every word that comes out of somebody's mouth is exactly what you would expect it to be, even if it isn't formulaic and you don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
So I knew nothing of this movie. After research, I know only a little bit more than that, other than having seen it and reacted to it. I loved it, and I'd love to tell you exactly. I'm always on the hunt for how a movie initially gets made.
Yeah.
I'm going to make something up. So in Europe.
It's Europe. They probably had some art council and they're like, here's free tax money to make a movie.
When you want to make a movie in Europe, you wake up in the morning, you have your breakfast. You open the door and you
announce, eggs and fish.
You announce to the neighborhood, right? You announce that you want to make a film. Now, I'm not saying it's immediately. It's not like 5 or 10. 45 minutes later, somebody shows up with a suitcase of cash and then you make a film. That's how it works over there. But so the thing is I know that this director is Danish. I know that he's 45 years old.
All right.
And I know that he appeared in not only
Oh, so the filmmaker is Danish.
Yeah.
I think he hates the Dutch.
Well, he, you know, I don't really, well, we'll get into that part.
Because the Dutch are real suspicious.
I do know that not only was he in several Danish movies and television shows that you've never heard of, he's also been in some Danish / Swedish movies that you've never heard of. So there's your background. and then we have a movie here that comes out that like next to no one has heard of outside of horror fans. And yet fucking, I think they pronounce it. Do they pronounce it Blumhouse?
Yeah.
Are already doing a remake. Even though
of
it's
this?
Yes. Even though it's in English, even though it came out a year ago.
Listen, they have quickly gone from like, I can't wait what they, like they were kind of like that A24 of cooler horror, like grittier horror. I
now
say.
A24 is A24.
Yeah, now A24 is like, we're just going to do both. And Blumhouse is like, I'm going to waste all my money on rebooting popular franchises. Do you know how much they spent on The Exorcist to get the rights to The Exorcist?
To fucking shit all over
yeah.
it?
Do you know how much they paid?
No.
$400 million for the Jesus. Rights to that.
Only
and
for
it feels like, now I have not seen the new one. And I'm sure we'll eventually talk about these in depth, but it really feels like the pitch because it's the guy who redid the Halloween, right? Who elevated Halloween
about killing that guy, by the way.
Era. But it really feels like he did the James Cameron pitch where he went into an office, wrote Exorcist equals possessed girl, and then looked at everyone and then girls. And then turned the dollar sign and the S into a dollar sign, yes. Dropped his marker and walked out. He's like, I'm sure it'll work again.
Yeah, exactly. And no, I think you're 100% right about that because it's like, number one, it was just made a year ago. Number two, it's in English.
Right.
And it's perfect. What do you think you're going to do with it? That it just drove me up the wall when I heard that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It feels ridiculous. And who wants to remake The Exorcist only to have John Carpenter say, I don't know how you fuck that up.
Right.
But they did.
They did.
So I want to say I can't wait to see it. I can. I can wait forever to see it because I know what he did to Halloween. So that's one thing. But yeah, we'll see it just so I can absolutely just get some fucking aggression out. But yeah, we have this movie. Now, I want to talk for a second about the geography of this film before we get into it. I'm going to go run to the bathroom real quick.
Jesus.
Just real okay. quick. But I want you, because here's what's going to happen. You're going to explain where these places are,
okay.
and then I'm going to come back and tell you where I think they are.
Okay.
So, first of all, do you have any personal experience with any of these areas?
I've been to Holland, yeah.
Okay, so tell me where and what that is.
Holland is a country, also called the Netherlands. I believe the Netherlands was like the provincial name for it, but now it's like the name of the country. But I'm not sure what the difference is. Regardless, I meant to look that up. I might, while Tim's talking about something. So yeah, Holland sets on the northern part of Europe. And then just to the northeast of that is Denmark. Denmark is kind of like a small, I would call it a peninsula, that kind of juts out of the northern half there. And it is like nestled right next to Sweden. Like there is a bridge that connects Sweden and Denmark. But yeah, they're relatively close. I don't know a lot about Danish culture or the country of Denmark itself.
You're already wrong.
Am I?
Yeah. This is what's fucked up, dude. And I don't say that you're wrong because I know better. I'm saying because I'm working through this same thing myself.
Yeah.
Holland is not a country.
Well, that's what I was, I'm not really sure on the, like, the Netherlands is the country.
And I'm not calling you
out. But Holland is.
I'm not calling you out. I'm just saying this is, people are worried about what's happening.
Don't say I'm wrong on something I never claimed. God damn it.
I'm going to say this. People are all worked up about what's happening in the Middle East, and we don't even have Scandinavia figured out, okay? So Holland, I thought, was a country.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's like a big neighborhood.
Yeah.
So the Netherlands
The former Holland was a province, and then it became the entire country, the Netherlands. It was folded into the Netherlands. Okay. Holland was a very large province.
Okay. So, all right. So there is a country called the Netherlands, which right away is confusing, but that's fine.
Because they're on the northern part of Europe. Yeah,
and why make it plural? Why are we making anything plural? It's one country, right? Holland.
Well, it's like the United States, though.
Well, yeah, but
one place, but we're made up of several states.
Right. Are they make up?
So Holland was one province, and then there were a lot of other. It's like the USSR, where a lot of different countries, but we called it one thing.
Are they made up of several Netherlands?
I'm going to look at, I said I would look at them while you were talking.
Yeah, so here we go. To the best of my knowledge, and this is going to solve nothing.
There are actually two Hollands that make up the Netherlands. There's North and South Holland. So, but it's like North and South Carolina. They're just the biggest and most popular parts.
Okay, so maybe this is a thing, like maybe it's like New England. Maybe somebody from another country hears us say that Boston is in New England, right? Which it is. But it's also in Massachusetts, which it's also in America.
Okay.
Okay, so I can understand how things get crazy. But Holland, I grew up my whole life thinking was a fucking country. It's not a country. It's apparently just an area of the Netherlands. So, okay, so here's my next question. If you're Dutch, does that mean you're just from Holland? Or does that mean you're Dutch if you're from another part of the Netherlands?
No, that's the Netherlands.
So all of the Netherlands, you're Dutch. Think. Yeah, dude, this is what I'm talking about. Well, I mean, it's impossible.
Fucking splitting hair. Who cares? Right.
But it's interesting, though.
Unless you're like from the probably like, no. No, please. I'm not Dutch.
But I love your
I'm Schmorgenbergen.
I love your Dutch accent. It's my favorite. Even if it
they didn't appear in this movie, which you're I didn't even notice it. You're like, I really missed the Dutch accent in this movie.
That's what I was really looking
for. Also, the Dutch people are kind of wimpy and don't talk a lot. I mean, I don't, the Danish guy talks nonstop.
Well, that's true. But okay, so you're Dutch if you're from the Netherlands. Maybe a little extra Dutch if you're from Holland. So the Danes are from what country?
Denmark.
Denmark.
Yeah.
So they're just called Danes just to shake it up a little bit. Like,
okay. I'm sure that is some sort of historical.
So all of Denmark people are Danes.
Yeah.
And Denmark is relatively close to the Netherlands.
Yeah, it's like they're northeast of each other. I think there's another country in there you got to go through in order to get to each other.
Okay,
I'll look that up.
So
here, I'll tell you this. This I found because they're like, where the hell did the thing go? The Netherlands' largest city, Amsterdam, is located in Noord-Holland. Historically, that region has been the largest contributor to the nation's wealth, so it became common practice to use the name as a synonym for the entire country.
Interesting.
But since most of the country's 20 million tourists only stop in Amsterdam, the Netherlands is dropping the nickname officially in order to encourage travelers to explore outside of Holland. And when I went to Holland, like, of course, I went to Amsterdam, okay. And then we had to go to another town, and I'm like, oh, other towns?
Interesting. Was it just, like, black volcanic rock? Like nothing.
No, it's gorgeous.
Is it really?
Dude, oh, it's so fucking gorgeous. And it's, you know, these cities are 600 years old. So it's like not, you know, there's no modern infrastructure. So it's so quaint and you can just fucking walk everywhere. You know, I'm not religious, but I can appreciate a cool church. Like the town I was in had this fucking awesome, just small church, but its steeple was like super tall.
Mm. So when you were in Amsterdam, did people speaking like, were you able to get by with English?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. I mean, and it's lazy on my part.
Yeah, we got very lucky that everyone in Europe was like, well, we kind of need a common thing to talk to each other with. Let's all learn English.
God bless
you. And we were like, God damn right, or we would fucking kill you.
Yeah. We saw, you saw what we did in Granada.
But it's only for language.
Yeah. So that's, okay. So that's good. But you have not been to Denmark, though.
No.
Okay.
No.
This movie is interesting because for somebody like me, who obviously is a like a baby floating down the river in a basket when it comes to world geography, like, I guess there are similarities, but also still some cultural differences between Denmark and the Netherlands.
Which, yeah. Oh, Germany is in between them.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay. So, and the thing is, like, that's fine. Like, it's interesting to me. I kind of wish I knew a little bit more about it. I bet you'd probably pick up a little, if you were either Danish or Dutch, you'd there's probably a couple inside jokes in here somewhere. Sure. I'm sure of it. But it's still.
Well, yeah, because they talk a lot about Sweden and like Denmark's relationship with Sweden. And I guess the Swedish people are kind of dicks to the Danish people.
Right.
But that's as much as I know.
Is Sweden, is that, like, remember when you and I were growing up and it was like the hottest women were supposed to be, wasn't it Swedish?
Oh, yeah, the Swedish bikini team.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, that was a thing, yeah.
Well, yeah, all those Nordic, dude, I mean, fucking Iceland, Sweden, Norway, they all have, like, giant hot women.
Yeah, they're
it's a very basic generalization.
But like even the average height of a dude is like 6 foot.
Yeah, they're all giant. Yeah. Not, yeah, please. Yeah, I'm not. It's not like the men are fucking squat trolls. Also, like 8 foot models.
Yeah, right. That's great. But no, so that was fun going into this movie. And look, I know that it sounds really shitty for me to be like, well, I'm glad this was in English, especially since I really am fine with foreign language films because I'm so used to reading subtitles anyway as somebody who's nearly deaf. And so like that part wouldn't bother me, but the fact, I don't know why they would choose to make it in English, but I'm really glad that they did.
Well, just because they speak two different languages. So they use English as a common...
so they would naturally.
Right.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that makes sense because when they're in the scenes just with each other, they speak the language. Okay. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. That's why when the Dutch couple's speaking, they're speaking in Dutch and the two are in the back like, what? Like, they could probably pick up some stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, figure out what they speak in Denmark.
So, is it? Yeah, dude. That's the other one. Is it? There's no languages. Danish. What do they speak? Like, either French or...
It is Danish. Their language is
Danish.
Oh, they
have a like Danish language. Okay. Yeah. The one that I'm always
it's tripped pretty
up...
It's pretty sweet.
The one that I'm always tripped up on is... Where is Van Damme from?
Austria?
No.
No?
It starts with a B.
Belgium?
Yes. But there is no Belgian language. It's just either French or something
yeah,
else.
I think they're like Switzerland where there's like four.
They don't have
there's
like all
Swiss,
language.
But then there's also like French Swiss, German Swiss, Italian Swiss. That place is crazy. I've been there too.
Wow.
So, I almost fell off. I almost jumped off a mountain there.
Jumped off a mountain?
Yeah, like I was doing like a joke, like because we went to a restaurant at like the top of a mountain, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do like a thing where it looks like I'm jumping off. And then as I was doing it, I looked down, and I was like, oh, shit, that is pretty sheer.
It's a real mountain.
And I'm like on snow, like that could have easily crumbled away.
Well, good thing you weren't on pine needles. Apparently the slipperiest thing.
Yeah, it was pine needles all the way down.
Right. So the idea for this film...
Belgium is actually in between... It's like nestled in between the Netherlands, Germany, and France.
And what language do they speak there?
Belgish?
I don't think... it's not like really Belgian.
That might be French,
it's
but...
It's just Belgish. I think they speak French. I'm pretty sure.
They speak Dutch, French, and German. They have three official languages.
Wow. Okay. Okay. We're learning a lot here.
Weird, the tiny country smashed in between those three is forced to speak those three languages. Right.
Yeah, go figure. They're like, should we make up our own language? Like, no, fuck this. I'm not doing another one. I've already done three. So here's what I love about this movie, because everybody knows I don't like the preachy stuff. This movie came from not like an ideology, but from literal fact. So the director got the idea from a postcard in his parents' house of a couple that they had met on vacation who had asked them to like come back and visit. So that's something that he grew up with. Then in his own life with his own family, he goes on vacation to Tuscany, just like the couple does in this movie. And they meet a family, and they were a Dutch couple,
mm-hmm.
and they asked them to come stay at their house, which they did, and then cut their child's tongue out. No, I'm kidding. It didn't go that far. They just invited them to stay at their house. And he was like, fuck no, and didn't go. Now, it's funny because he's very quick to say, like, that Dutch couple that we met were very, very nice people.
Yeah.
The fact that I said no to their invitation doesn't mean that they were weird. Like, they were super nice. We met them, but it was just kind of like, let's not do this.
Yeah.
So they didn't go. But what this movie is I love that he came up with this phrase here. All of what I just said happened to him. The rest is what he called a dark fantasy. So it's kind of like, what would have happened if we went?
Mm.
And like, what could have happened if we went? So that's where his mind starts going. He starts working with his brother, and they start writing for the film. And what they really wanted was, the quote here is, relatable realism.
Okay.
Which is like, so it's not about supernatural forces, which, by the way, were in the script originally.
Oh. Ooh.
And then he looked at it and he's like, that's not as scary.
Yeah.
And he's the same as you. Like, he grew up in a way to where, like, the devils and possession and stuff just wasn't scary to him.
Right.
So the scary thing is, like, what humans are capable of. So that's why he took all that supernatural stuff out. But he was intrigued, and this is what really, if there's one thing that sets this movie apart, it's that he was intrigued by the idea of evil being present and it being the protagonist's fault that they are subject to the torment of it.
Yeah.
Meaning the evil's out there, but what happened to you is because you fucked up.
Right.
So that's pretty interesting. Usually in horror film, it's like, I'm evil. I'm going to overtake you no matter what you're like.
Right.
This is like, I'm evil. You have an idea of things not being right, but you're just too big of a pussy to do anything about it.
Yeah.
And then what happens, happens. So they also set out, this is interesting, they wanted, now, I don't know how big of a feat this is, but they wanted to make the most disturbing movie in Danish film history.
Okay.
Which
I don't know a lot of Danish films, but they might have done it.
I'm sure they did. I when I read the quote, I kind of felt like there hadn't been a lot of disturbing Danish films. So it wasn't, I'm not saying it wasn't a tall order, but I feel like they absolutely like went above and beyond.
Yeah,
I'm sure. A lot of actors turned it down because of the last 20 pages. Like, they're like, no, I'm not going to do that. Can you rewrite it? So he even, like, because so many actors turned it down, he actually did attempt to rewrite it. But as he tried to instill a little bit more hope into it, he's like, this is just an American horror film.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I want to do things the old school way where it isn't all like, you know, food courts and breakdancing at the end. Like, you know, this is sometimes shit is bad and it stays that way. So, so, yeah, and what's funny is he said the Dutch people have been pretty cool about the movie. Like, they're like, I know you painted us in a bit of a light,
right?
But they've been pretty neat about it. He's like, he's not about to spend the night at any of their houses, like, anytime soon, which is kind of funny. He said that Germany, when he went to go to the screenings in Germany, they were just laughing loud, hooting and hollering and screaming and everything. He said in South Korea, they were, I'm paraphrasing here, but nervous and excited. But that's what happened in South Korea. And that's not far off from what he said.
I could see that. I mean, I, that's how I kind of felt through this. I don't know if excited is the word. I mean, maybe I was. It was a definite.
He said they did not say a word. Like there was no, there was silence throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
Until the end. And then they fucking like cheered like whoa, no other. Loved it.
Oh, okay. Like just not at a part, but like when the movie ended, yes, they cheered for the film
which
itself.
Maybe
okay,
they're just actually like nice going movie viewers. You
right,
know?
Yeah. Like, they're just like, you don't
that's
talk
pretty
in a
refreshing
movie. Like,
yeah. Please, more of you.
Because, yeah, when I watched this, I think I told you, I checked the time on this, I don't know how many times, but not because I was bored and I was like, when is this end? I was like, I know something's going to happen. God, please, when? When does yes, it happen? Like, this movie is, for me, was just like 80 minutes of dread and then 10 minutes of shock.
So let's talk about that a little bit. That the 80 minutes of dread. We know that you love breakfast.
Yeah.
That's been established. But there are a lot of things that happen in this movie where they happen as a result of somebody subjecting themselves to something that even they knew initially wasn't really what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I know that we joke a lot on this show about like you, how would I even put that? that you are one of the sweetest, friendliest, warmest people that anybody could ever know. But I know that you personally, you don't just like, you're not one of those people that just bounces around a room and loves talking to everybody.
No.
Okay.
No.
So I can understand how you watching this movie about people being out of their element, staying in a house that isn't theirs with people that they barely know, things are getting a little cringy. That to me is your fucking waking nightmare.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Not to say that you don't stand up for yourself, because if there's something that you don't like, it's no. So I'll give you that. I will give you that.
Very true. but yeah, there are a lot of parts in this movie where you're just like, I was just like clenched up. But yeah, the end of the movie, you like to think you would act differently. You like to think. I mean, I'll talk about, I'm not afraid of bats, right? I think I've talked about this on the show before. Not afraid of bats. People, I hear about people, you know, I've even had people be like, I've got a bat in my house. I'm like, do you want me to come and take care of it? No, I got it taken care of. Okay. Until the night we woke up and Nancy's like, there is a bat in our room and you can see it flying around. And I just took the covers all the way up and I'm like, who do I call to do this? So, you know, you think you want to think, yeah, I do the right thing or the brave thing in this scenario.
Sure.
But you don't know until you're in that scenario. Maybe, you know, had it been 9 o'clock at night and she's like, there's a bat up in our room, I would have been like, I'll go get it. But being woken up in that vulnerable, I've got no clothes on, and you know, we had our fucking baby in the room with us, so she like snatches the baby and runs out. So you want to think you're gonna do the right thing. I feel with this scenario very different from a bat in my room. I feel like I would have, because I, you know, while I thank you so nice, such nice things you said about me being sweet and kind, I also have my father's rage inside of me that I've tamped down. So I could, you know, in a scenario, I could rip a motherfucker's throat out.
Sure.
I feel like,
yeah,
if I needed to.
When you don't like something, you really don't like it.
No.
And you're not afraid to do it. I've seen it.
If anyone wants to check the audio meters from last week's episode, because we had a friend say to us, he's like, you can just hear you getting louder and louder and louder. So, you know, there's a my passion is there.
Yeah, I don't doubt that that if it came to that you would. Now, allow me to just share an anecdote in the reverse, but it's just because it's so fun. One time, you and a group of our friends came over to my house in high school after school.
Uh-huh.
And I have a BB gun. This is one of my most favorite things of all time, because in a way it sounds cowardice, but it's kind of in my mind pretty badass, which is we were shooting the BB gun around in my front yard. My dad's car was parked out in front. I don't know what you were aiming at. I have no clue. I don't know if it was a misfire.
Yeah, we were just kind of doing like doing a dive roll and then shooting it.
Right.
I think I was trying to shoot at a tree.
All I know is that the back windshield of my dad's car goes,
yeah,
and then
spider
it just
webbed.
Spider cracked just all the way across, and you dropped the gun and just started running down the street. I don't know where you thought you were running to, but you were like, I'm the fuck out.
Yeah, my dad. And, I wasn't even afraid of your dad. It was my parents' reaction to that.
But it was kind of the badass thing of like, I don't give a fuck what just happened here. Like, I don't know about all you guys, but I'm out. And it was kind of awesome in that way.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that.
Yes. So that happened. I just went inside him very like...
Because it wasn't my first mistake with a BB gun.
Yeah.
I have a long, bad history with BB guns. Yeah. So that was like, I'm dead.
Have you ever actually owned one yourself?
I mean, not like I bought one. I traded a remote control car for one once.
Yeah.
And then that guy started bullying me. And so then they like... he and his buddies...
Didn't I gift you one?
I don't think so.
God, I know
it's possible.
I know I bought a Red Rider.
Yes, actually, as an adult, someone bought me one too, and I
think that was
funny.
Me, dude. I think it was. I think it was.
Like within the last 15 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely,
then it was you. Okay. Hilarious. Yeah. Probably because of that story.
Yeah. Yes. It all makes sense now.
But yeah, like I remember for some reason, they just, you know, friends sometimes just fucking turn on you. So I had a whole group of friends who were like, yeah, you're not our friend anymore. We're going to pick on you now. So they would like,
fuck that.
I know. Fuck those guys. Then that guy showed up one time to my business. It was like, this place is great. And I wanted to be like, get the fuck out of here. But I was just like, oh, thank you. Okay, bye. Like, he didn't stick around. Anyway, they had, you know, they'd like been vandalizing my house, like pouring shit on the like mailbox and stuff, like
Jesus. Weird
shit. And so one day our doorbell rang and I went to answer the door and they had tied, this was in October, they had tied like a rope to one of our pumpkins and then to the doorknob. So when I opened the door, the pumpkin would fall and break. But I saw it. So I'm like, and I knew exactly who it was. So I fucking sat up in my bedroom with all the lights of some fucking sniper. I was American snipering up in my room and I could see them coming down the road and they drove real slow. And then you just hear the ping.
Yes.
As the car takes off. And then they turned me into my parents. We're like, yeah, he shot my car with his BB gun that I gave him. Fucking assholes.
Will you
I had to lie to my parents and be like, I can't believe you wouldn't believe me over them.
Will you tell me who this is after the show?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna fucking beat their asses. Fuck that. But wait, is that the one that you got in the newspaper with?
No.
That was another story.
I was shot by someone else with that.
Okay.
Yeah, a friend's...
Oh, you were shot.
I was shot. Yes, a friend's little brother shot me in the eye with a BB gun. Thankfully, it missed my eye. Like, it hit my orbital bone. But, like, I saw it flash by my eye.
And it made the newspaper.
A big shocker. That kid went on to actually kill someone. So.
Are you serious? Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, that kid had
a lot to talk about.
He might be dead, too. I don't know.
Wow.
But, yeah, so I've got a... quite a history with BB guns.
I had a quick anecdote. yeah, your whole life has been like the trajectory is just like on the like flight of a BB.
Yeah. The military found out. They hounded me forever. I'm like, no, yeah. I retired from that life. I can't go back to it.
We have the Treadstone program that we're interested in.
I could have been the next Jason Bourne, but.
Yes. Back to geography that we don't understand. It's pretty fascinating in that you know, the idea of being uncomfortable. I think where you were going with that is the idea that we would like to think that we know exactly how would respond.
That's what I was saying. And I could see myself, you know, I could see myself as Bjorn because I have done that before where I'm like, okay, you know what? You're always this way. Fucking one time. Just try it. And then, of course, you're in a scenario and you're like, all right, this is going how I expected it. But don't be the guy who backs out of it. Just see it through to completion. And then you can be like, I tried the thing. I didn't like it. But at least I can say I did it.
Okay. So, I think that is a really, really great point, though, about what people... would feel like they would do, and that you might have a little bit too high of an opinion of yourself to think that you would do that, because most people just freeze. Now, here's the thing. I'm not even saying that that is for what I'm about to say for the next 45 minutes. I'm not about to say that that's a bad thing, because we as a species has survived.
Right.
So maybe most of the time erring on the side of I'm not going to like rip somebody's throat out roadhouse style is probably the better choice. Right. But sometimes you have to. And that's what this movie is all about. And if you're faced with that, especially if you're faced with it repeatedly, then you have to question the fact that I, like you just said, didn't take that one chance, that one time, that was it worth like losing everything?
Yeah.
Which obviously it isn't. I'm going to go to the bathroom one more time.
Dude.
What I want you to...
Time's the funniest thing you've said so far.
What I want you to talk about a little bit is... We can't deny, I mean, it's fun to talk about the big themes of this movie, and trust me, we're going to get into all that. But there's also some amazing acting performances here. So tell me a little bit about, like, necessarily, like, maybe who was your favorite and what you just thought about the performances and the nuances in general.
Okay. I really like Patrick, the Dutch dad, and I liked Louise, the Danish mom. Those were probably the two strongest performances. But you know, it's hard to, I don't know. It's like, because they're, not American, I feel like I don't judge acting the same way. 'Cause it's like, I don't understand, or I wasn't, you know, raised with how they speak it. Not just like language per se, but there is, you know, inflection and things like that. And so things are perceived differently. Not that Europe is drastically different from us. They're probably the most similar. But, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, there are especially a lot of great nonverbal acting in this. Looking worried. His fucking scream face is fucking awesome. But, yeah, I don't know. It's like, I mean, I loved all the performances. I wasn't like, oh, this guy or this girl really brought it down. Like, they were all great, but yeah, Dutch dad, Danish mom, two of my favorites. And we're probably the most diametrically opposed personalities in the movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think a lot about what you just said about the nonverbal acting. We see a lot of that from Bjorn, the Danish.
Yeah. Guy. And Abel, the young boy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
See, I didn't think he spoke at all, and then they talk about him talking. You do hear him talk a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But I was like, oh, I thought he just didn't talk.
Right. And I kind of almost would have preferred if he didn't, because I don't really want to hear that. But poor kid. But no, Bjorn has – he's certainly the character in the movie that probably there is the most mining of, there is the most examination of. Mm-hmm. We pick up a lot from how other people respond to situations just fine. It's not like anybody else is ignored. But the camera chooses to focus on him a lot with his reactions.
Yeah, he's our main character.
And yeah, and those reactions are really interesting because, you know, we as people are still pretty simple. So when there are several reaction shots in the movie of him reacting to the Dutch character of Patrick, a lot of his reactions to Patrick before things get crazy are these reactions of being charmed by somebody, being sort of titillated by somebody. And in our simple minds, if we see a man react to another man that way, we feel like it has to be sexual.
Right.
But it really isn't in this movie. It's that he sees something in Patrick that he admires.
Yeah.
And the camera lets us see him admire it, even though it's very understated, because the movie kind of paints the Danish people as very, you know, I don't want to say soft-spoken, but they're not the ones that are going to jabber your ear off on the bus about the weather.
Right. You know?
So we see him internalizing things. We see him digesting information and without any lines. And I really, really like that you picked up on that and that you saw that as well, that he is sort of like, I like that. Yeah. I like the fact that he said that. That's a little strange.
Yeah.
A little, it's a little bit more information than like maybe me or the people that I have these boring ass dinner parties with would say, but I kind of like that.
Yeah.
And we see him go through that. We see him go through
kind of that antithesis. Patrick is like the antithesis of Bjorn.
Yeah.
Where I think that, yeah, that's where, I think that's why Bjorn was like, yeah, let's go hang out with these people. Cause it's like, this guy is friendly, outgoing. Like you kind of feel, I bet he felt safe with him because he's like, this guy could handle a situation. You know, you're hoping that guy doesn't cause a situation. Right. Unfortunately, he does later. But yeah, it's one of those like, I could, like, if I'm feeling down on myself, this guy seems to embody all the things I hate that I'm lacking.
And the really heartbreaking part of this is that I think that these guys could be really good for each other if one of them wasn't a serial killer.
Right.
So to me, this movie was all about balance. It's all about balance because Bjorn represents one end of the spectrum, which is politeness, consideration, thoughtfulness, caring, you know, just trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And on the opposite end of the spectrum, Patrick represents that sort of animal instinct, the essence of yourself, the part of yourself that's just screaming to get out, sort of that instinctual, you know, stereotypically male aspect of like, I need to demonstrate something. I need to show something.
I'm going to do what I want until someone stops me. And I hope they try to stop me because I'm going to show them what that's like.
Right. Yeah. Like Cedric the Entertainer said, I wish a motherfucker would. And so, yeah, that's the essence of that. And Bjorn is very attracted to that. Not in a sexual way, but Bjorn, in the beginning of the movie, we see him going through these boring-ass dinner parties. We see him kind of floating through his life, and he's just he's not speaking up in his own life.
Yeah. He's very pale.
Yeah.
He's very thin, but not like, he has like zero muscle definition.
Redefining pale.
I'm serious. I joked about the nipples, but yeah, the nipples are, they are like the SpongeBob, the goofy SpongeBob meme. Morris, you sent me the picture of Marty Feldman. Like, that's what this guy's nipples look like. Is like, they are, his chest is kind of broad, but not defined.
Right.
So it's like his skin has been stretched out to the edges and his nipples.
It's basically,
I know it's just like a non thing, but it looked so weird.
If you've ever seen porn pre-80s missionary style, like that's what it is. Like that's where they go. They find that they're like, nipples are like water. They'll find their way like to like the lowest level. But yeah, so he's extremely pale. He's extremely passive and he's a nice guy. It doesn't mean that sometimes people
he's
can
got
be
red
so,
hair, which I feel is like not.
Yeah.
Coincidental.
Right.
Not that it was on purpose, but that absolutely adds to the. Not to harp on red-haired people, but it is like a very small subset of the population
right.
that has that. So it is this kind of, and so because they're a minority, they get picked on.
Sure. And the thing is, yeah, he's the guy, he's not, if you had him in a classroom and it is like a student, he's not going to be the first one to raise his hand. If he gets called on, he's going to have the right answer. He's going to have done the work. He's going to have done the right thing, but he's not going to be assertive enough to feel like it's his right to put that opinion forward first. So we see him sort of out of focus. We see him sort of disconnected. And there's a really, really nice scene, very subtle, in the beginning when they're still on vacation and they're watching, they're in Tuscany and they're watching sort of this evening's entertainment and it's some Italian singers or whatever. And if I'm not mistaken, he's got tears in his eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And his eyes are welling up. And Patrick takes notice of that. And I think that he is, what Bjorn is welling up about is watching somebody express emotion, mm-hmm. like he wishes he could. And through these voices that he's hearing, he's allowing that emotion to well up in him, but he dare not express it. Now, on the flip side of things, we have his wife who has here's the thing. For the rest of this episode, I may say some things that some people feel are a bit old-fashioned. Okay. But
I can't believe we made it nearly 180 episodes, and finally, your old-fashioned
right
viewpoints are coming out.
So she has, without just coming right out and saying it, has basically had to assume both roles because he is so frozen in himself that even in a scene, in a very telling scene later on, when they are staying with the Dutch family and things are beginning to get not as uncomfortable as they eventually get, but uncomfortable enough,
yeah,
he defers to her. Like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to handle this. And then when she comes in, he is at a loss for words and he defers to her.
Yeah.
And she has had to take on the role of both the husband and wife, however you want to perceive that, in a traditional context.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say it that way. So she is the one that has to speak up. She is the one that has to be assertive. And he just is unable to connect to that part of himself that is willing to speak his mind. And here we have the title. Here we have one of the best scenes of the film, eventually, where it's the final day. Bjorn, of course, has no idea what's going on, but Patrick is in a really wonderful scene where Bjorn and his wife, as the visiting Danish couple, have every right to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But they are caught by the fact that they left the house. The daughter left the rabbit. Now, here's another thing. She has a stuffed rabbit. I am a parent of a child who had a stuffed animal,
yeah,
that literally could not go to sleep without it. And I have spent hours of my life searching for it,
sure,
so that she could go to sleep. So I get it. But there was a moment where they decided to leave that house because things were not looking good. And the fact that the daughter thought that she left that behind, the mother was ready to say, you know what? We'll get another one.
Yeah.
Fuck it. It's gone.
Yeah. You got to teach your kids about loss at some point and how to cope with that.
Yes.
That's where I'm thinking that.
And Bjorn, just couldn't handle that. So he had to turn around and go back. And in going back, they are very convincingly, believe it or not, talked into staying.
Yeah.
Because the thing of it is that this couple that, as we eventually find out, lives on the edge of society and exists in a world of evil, was manipulative enough to be like, well, I know you didn't like these things, but aren't you also guilty of something?
Right.
It's like if gaslighting were a scene, it would, and I hate to even use that term, but why? I mean, but it is
a real term though. That means real things.
It is. It does. And maybe overly applied, but it does. It does actually mean real things.
Or it was under applied before.
But they do a great job of doing it to where
the fucking word gaslighting has become politicized. It's ridiculous. Fucking ridiculous world we live in.
But here's where we are. So this Danish couple that has made the choice to leave and has now somehow found their way back to the Dutch house with every right in the world to leave still is manipulated into being like, oh, okay.
Man, we're real assholes for wanting to leave.
Right. One more day. And he does really, I mean, you want to stay. You want to stay as the viewer for that extra day.
It's going to be a great day.
Right. And that's the thing about the actor that plays Patrick. Like I said to you that he was a baby of Javier Bardem and Robert Downey Jr., which he really is. He's very charming. He's very convincing.
He looks like that guy that plays... He's in The Walking Dead. Tegan? Keegan? I don't know.
Oh, Negan.
Name. Negan.
Yeah.
He kind of looks like that guy.
Similar to. Yeah. And
that presence. I mean, he's got that.
He also kind of looks like the guy from John Wick Part 2. that is the one that brings him in, like the curly hair.
I only saw it once. I don't know.
Yeah.
They all kind of blend together.
Swarthy.
Are you talking about the one with Nonstop Action?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that one.
All right.
And the one with all the deaths and the killing.
That cool sequence with one unique weapon? Yes. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Yes. The one sequence where you're like, fuck yeah, that's awesome. And which is a lot of them. So, we get just wrapped into this Dutch couple and just how convincing they are. And Bjorn isn't going to do anything about it. He's left it up to his wife. And then we eventually go into what I mentioned earlier, which is a study of a movie where at what point does it become your fault? At what point do you recognize red flags and then say, well, I'll just stick around and have it out, you know? Now, let me ask you this question. In that scene where the Dutch couple is trying to convince them to stay for one more day.
Yeah.
Did they do a good enough? Would you have stayed another? Like, were they convincing enough? Do you think in that scene to be like, okay, maybe somebody would give him another chance?
I mean, me, if I'm going to be honest with myself, yeah. Because I'd be like, all right, I'd feel bad if I'm going to leave. Yeah. Like, you guys, like, if you caught me leaving, then I'd be like, oh, let's get something out of my car.
Right.
I'm coming back in for breakfast. I would have felt awful. I mean, I don't know. There is also a part of me. I mean, also a part of me personally where I would be looking for any excuse to leave.
Why didn't they
I'll tell you this. Me personally, because the way we're introduced to Patrick, when they're in Tuscany, he first comes over and is like, hey, they're at the pool and Bjorn's got his shit on a chair and Patrick's like, can I take this chair? And Patrick's like, yeah, I guess so. That's the first time we see him. The second time, yeah, there's like this big kind of communitive dinner that they're having. I'm not really sure where they're staying. It's probably some resort or something like that. But yeah, big, long family style, classic Italian dinner where Patrick stands up and gives like a toast. Right there, I'd be like, I'm avoiding this fucking guy like the plague.
Yeah.
This guy talks way too much and wants to be the center of attention way too much. Stay away from him, everyone. Nancy's like, oh, I talked to that guy. I'd be like, please don't do that again.
He's a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, don't do it again. So, yeah, me personally, I would not have gotten in this scenario
right.
at all. But, yeah, like within that specific moment, yeah, I mean, I probably would be like, I'm sorry, it was my fault.
Yeah.
But still be like, then secretly be like, but still, can you fucking believe they made me pay for dinner?
Right, exactly. Well, yeah. And
it's only one more day. We can do that.
So, and these people, as we eventually come to realize, it's not, I mean, yes, I do believe it's Bjorn. Okay, so would Bjorn get killed if he was just the nice guy that he is? No. He's getting killed because he's in the presence of serial killers.
Right.
That's obviously number one at the top of the list of why he dies. Okay. But but right underneath that, 1A is his unwillingness to do anything about it. But I can understand how somebody is going to think to themselves, I can think of a lot of different scenarios, but I'm crazy if I think that these people are serial killers. Like,
right.
What does that make me? That makes me paranoid and fucking psychotic, right. You know?
Serial killers don't have a family.
Right. And, you know, now if you're
which is true,
if you're with somebody, right, yeah, if you're with somebody and that out of the blue thinks that whom the people that you're with are trying to kill you, you're going to react to that in a certain sort of way.
Yeah.
But the question is when is it enough? Like, it'd be easy to sit here. This is my point. It'd be easier to sit here and beat up on Bjorn. That's easy.
Yeah.
Why didn't you do this? And trust me, I'm eventually going to do that. But why didn't you do that? But it's at the same time, you know, like you said earlier, you can think that all you want, but that doesn't mean that you're actually going to do it. Chances are you're going to freeze with fear.
Yeah.
Which is what he did. Or it's like, I'm going to wait for the escape that is so easy that it's basically holding my hand and walking me through the escape. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you're waiting for. You don't want the escape where you actually have to be like, fuck you, you're crazy, you're mean, you've been rude, my wife and my daughter and I, we're leaving because of your actions. You're not waiting for that. You're waiting for a... you're like praying that like your daughter has the sniffles so you can be like, oh, she's sick. Like, we should probably go, right. Which I was waiting for that the whole fucking movie. Like, why don't you just say one of them has fucking diarrhea or something?
Yeah. And,
like, you just have to go.
Well, they think that guy's a doctor.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Because, yeah, we find it because, yeah, he tells them in Tuscany he's a doctor, which is part of the trust where they're like, why? Yeah, this guy's a doctor. Like, it's not going to be.
Yeah.
We're certainly not going into a bad scenario. No doctor would risk his entire life and career.
That's true. Like, if you were to have somebody you were to trust, like, by occupation, it would be like doctor or pilot.
Right.
It'd be like, if shit gets really bad, no matter what we end up doing together, like, this person's probably going to be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, it's not until the last day where Louise cuts her finger and they're like, oh, calling the doctor, I need you. And he's like, oh, I'm not a doctor. I actually lied about that just so you'd like me. Like, he's so fucking honest about
it. Right. Yeah. Which I'm sitting there and I'm like, does that work? Like, can I just tell everybody that I'm a doctor? Like,
try it.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're talking to another doctor, no one's going to really. You tell them whatever. What are they going to know?
Well, I mean, I could tell people.
Unless you're like, yeah, I did some brain surgery, removed a spleen. They'd be like, I don't think you know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. And I can tell people that I'm a reverend. I mean, that's
me
legit.
Too.
Yeah. So why don't we just lead with that?
Yeah, we should talk about how ordained we are every episode.
Yeah, just how ordained we
how
are.
How ordained.
We might get to something like that. But
how many weddings have you done?
What's that?
How many weddings have you officiated?
Probably, if I had, I'm not going to count them through for so as to not do some dead air. I'm going to say probably 10 to 12.
Oh, wow. I've only done two.
A lot. But what it became was is that people knew. So I've done weddings that were everything from 400 people, 400 guests, to literally people who, for tax purposes, got married in my dining room and then had an actual wedding that everybody else that was in
sure.
attendance thought was the first wedding,
sure.
but it wasn't. So, yeah. And then
that was one of mine. One of two.
Right.
It was a sham.
So, right. Isn't it so funny that it's like, does this really count? You know, it's crazy.
It just shows you weddings are for the guests.
I'll tell you what, though.
For other people.
I would charge $150 when I did it to the people who I did charge. And I put a lot of effort. I mean, I wrote like different sermons for each person based on who they are as
people.
That's
pretty cool.
So, yeah, I enjoyed that. I'd love to say that I was a doctor of something, though. Right. What is the shortest amount of study that you have to do to become a doctor? That's a great question. For our
only audience. 12 years. That's the shortest.
Jesus. So anyhow, I have
waiting for the actually email incoming.
Right. So I have a word written here. It the timing of this coincides with the last time that I'm going to go to the bathroom, but. What I want to talk about, how far are we?
We'll see.
Okay. So this movie begs a question as to whether or not being – when you grow up as a kid, you think that being polite, being nice, that there is ultimately nothing wrong with that. And nobody ever tells you, like, you might have to stop being nice – if you're in the presence of serial killers who cut children's tongues out, like that's never added on to the end of that. It's just be nice all the time. So the question is in our society, has there been some usefulness of certain gender roles that have, lost their way.
You're gonna ask me this?
No, I'm not. I'm going to say something. I'm gonna come back with an
dead
anecdote.
Silent bathroom break.
I'm gonna come back with an anecdote. But let me. Okay. So before we get into the craziness there, let me just ask this. So taking, before we go into the nuts and bolts in it, of it, go back to that, one dinner party prior to them ever even going to the family's house.
Yeah.
And there is a certain rationale of whether or not you would go.
Yeah.
Now, I want you to completely strip everything that we've been talking about as far as would you, wouldn't you, what criteria, how long do you need to do this? If you had had that charming of a couple of dinners with somebody.
Yeah.
And if somebody had invited you that way, would you or would you not go, and how would you go about either going or not going? Would you write them a letter? Would you say that you politely decline, or would you just go and say, you know what, let's just try
go this? I hope it's a quick bathroom break. No, I would fucking ghost them. I would never fucking write back at all. What are they gonna do? Like, unless they showed up at my house, then you know they're crazy. Yeah, if I got a letter from anyone who's like, had a great time on vacation with you, come to our house, I would be like, I don't do that with my normal friends. So I'm not going to do it with these strangers, and I'm not going to write them back and be like, sorry. Like, I'll ignore a fucking text, no problem. So I don't know why I'd write a letter to anyone explaining myself. Because I also would never, I wouldn't. For the same reason, I would never invite anyone to my house after only knowing them for a weekend on vacation. I'm not letting those. What if those people are fucking serial killers? Like, you don't know who's a serial killer. It could be anyone. So, yeah, I would ignore the request and go on with my solitary life.
Literally no, like, thanks for the invite, but we got a lot going on, blah, blah, blah. Like, nothing.
I mean, if that were in a text. That is the weird thing about this. I mean, they wrote a letter. Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Was it from Tuscany, the postcard?
Well, the...
I wonder if they were there scouting.
That's what I thought was... Here's the funny thing. I didn't realize in that scene that they were already back at that home.
Oh.
I thought they were just in their room at Tuscany. So it's like, this is really fucking weird.
Yeah, there is no kind of indication like time's passed.
No.
A very good time.
Yeah, you eventually get it. Yeah. But yeah.
But yeah, I would, maybe in a text I'd be like, oh yeah, maybe sometime, you know, I would try and kick it down the road. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd just be like, no, but I would put it off as long as I could to where they were just like, I get the hint. I'm going to stop asking.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Because even at the bar, like there are times where I guess it's just whatever mood that I'm in. But there are times where it's like, you know what, I don't need another friend. Like, I just don't need to spend the next hour entertaining this person who, and it's, you know, congratulations to me for being an inviting person or whatever that made this person feel like I would be somebody that would be open to talking with and getting to know, and they think that that's interesting. I'm flattered by that. But sometimes you just don't want to have to fucking deal with that.
Yeah.
And so for you to say like, no, we're not going, for a lot of obvious reasons, like, I don't blame you for that.
Yeah.
And you don't owe them anything.
No.
So about these gender roles, about these things. Now, this isn't just coming from me, by the way. This is coming from the director, that he said that this movie isn't just about people. It isn't just about, like, people and things happening to them because they're in certain situations. That he did say that it is about masculinity and femininity.
Sure.
And it is about evil itself. And so how you respond to that. Now, I'd like to think that I'm evolved enough. Before I say anything, I'm going to shoot down anything that I might say by saying that I think that it's unfair to talk about gender roles when you're discussing how to defend somebody, how to stand up for somebody, and how to make somebody know that you care about them because you stood up for them. I think it's unfair because there is such a thing as like being raised by a single mother.
Yeah.
So maybe that single mother had a fucking coward ass prick who didn't stick around. And so then how is it a masculine role for somebody to stand up for her child.
Right.
When she's the only one who was willing to stay there and raise the children.
Yeah.
So that, I believe, creates a gaping hole in the idea of this being geared towards a certain gender.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's bullshit, and all you have to do is watch a little Nature is Metal to know that you don't fuck with a lioness.
Right.
Even if you're one of those big, like, giant mane males, you don't fuck with them because they will fucking kill you.
Yeah.
So to strip it down to gender, I think is, I do think that's old-fashioned, and I do think that it's misguided. However,
I mean, if I can get old fashioned, we are talking about protecting children, which is stereotypically the mother's job. So, of course, she's going to be the one who gets defensive about the children.
Sure. No, that's true. Now, here's the thing. This is interesting. There was a situation that I was aware of where a young girl was being bullied by classmates. And I was so taken by it that I brought it up at anonymously at my office because I was so bothered by it. And there was a guy there who was really thinking exactly the same thing that I was. And he said that make sure that her dad stands up for her and make sure that she knows that, that the daughter sees that her dad did it. Not a mom that's like, hey, I tend to all the usual things when it comes to school and this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that her father sees that he's being strong for her. Now, again, I think that's unfair if you have like a single mother a situation. But I do think I know for a fact that there's something to that. Because I have been in a certain situation, and I'm not going to go into any detail here, but there was a certain situation that one of my daughters was involved in, and she is a very kind person.
Wait, can I ask a question about the previous thing? Was the person bullied a girl or a boy? It was a girl?
Yes.
So why is it important that she sees the dad stand up for her? What's the drawback from seeing a strong female? Maybe teaching her like, hey, you don't have to rely on a man to stand up for you. You as a woman can stand up for yourself and be tough. Why is it important that the dad do it?
I think that that's a question to ask a woman.
Oh, suddenly Tim's without opinion.
No, I'll be honest about that. I'm asking you.
You admitted, you said, sure. I was thinking the same thing. Sure. So why is that?
I think that is a question better asked of a girl with a,
but I'm asking
with a present
you,
father.
I'm asking you why that was important. You thought that was important. Why do you think that was important?
Because I think that societally that your dad is supposed to be strong for you. This isn't taking anything away from what a mother is capable of.
Uh-huh.
But I think that societally, if a daughter knows that her father stood up for her and fought for her, that I think that that means something to a young girl in this society.
Okay.
I'm not saying that I invented that.
No, you certainly did not.
But I do believe that that is a thing, and I think that many, I don't think any women would tell you that it wouldn't matter if their mother was the one to stand up for them. I don't think they would. I don't think any person would say that. But I do think, rightly or wrongly, old fashioned or not, I think that they would say that it mattered that their father stood up for them. Now, maybe that's actually in some ways a sort of backwards thing where it's like, oh, my dad actually took the time to care about me or whatever. maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Maybe a lot of young daughters feel like they are largely ignored by their fathers.
Yeah.
And that if this was something that dad actually, I mean, again, all this paints men in such a terrible light, but
maybe that's, keep going.
Maybe that's part of it that, you know, I, maybe as a, and the, again, this is, I'm not qualified to answer this, but maybe a lot of young girls grow up vying for their father's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so that if it is their father that steps in and says, you're not going to fuck with my daughter, maybe that, rightly or wrongly, carries more weight.
Sounds like that dad sucks. And it's only getting involved now.
Well, I'm not saying
a bad dad.
I'm not saying that necessarily. I just think that it's more to the point. I think it's about anybody standing up for you.
Sure,
that's a number one.
Yeah,
but I think that if you're in a situation where, how do I put this? It's like I don't think I'm being old fashioned to say that there are certain societal assignments that exist. I didn't create this.
Right. You just bought into it.
They exist nonetheless. Again, that's why I led with, I think a woman would be more suited to answer this question. And I think you'd be shocked to find out, maybe you wouldn't. But I think you'd be shocked to find out that they'd say, yes, absolutely. Women.
Is this one of your one, I asked one person and they said, yes, that no, would be. So therefore.
No, there were more than one. So
you've done the research.
Yeah.
Okay. Do your own research.
Yes. I'm saying I think whether it's a misguided societal thing, we're not talking about whether it's the right thing or the only thing.
Yeah.
We're just talking about if it is a thing.
You and this guy feel it's the right thing.
What's that?
You and this other guy feel it's the right thing. That the man be the one who shows aggressive dominance.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. And not to say that they're the only ones who
I'm not
can,
surprised.
But I'm saying that I think that sometimes I feel like, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, that there has been a demonization of masculinity that I think is completely unwarranted. Because
toxic masculinity. Who use masculinity as a weapon and as an excuse to be shitty people.
And I think that
is what people don't like.
I think but to me it's toxic behavior either way. Because the people that were bullying that girl were girls. And mean ass fucking cruel shitty fucking cunts, and I'll say that.
Yeah.
To treat another girl that young, that defenseless, like that, were absolutely abhorrent, horrible people.
Who do you think those girls learned that behavior from, their mom or their dad?
I can't say that.
All right.
I know that I know that the bathrooms at our local watering hole in the male's bathroom, it says something about don't just hear people, listen to them. And I know that the girls' bathroom is filled with hate and this person sucks, that person
there
sucks.
There's plenty of that person in the men's bathroom. Well,
it says Wright's Barnyard right now, which is a local family entertainment center, literally. That's what it says. But I have heard that from girls going into that bathroom that they say, yeah, it is nothing but venom in that girl's bathroom. So I think that it's just as sexist to say that horrible behavior doesn't exist within women as it is to say that it all comes from men.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is that in this movie, regardless of man or woman, I am going to shoot my own argument, a hole in my own argument, to say that by the end of this movie, I had given up on the father.
Sure. Okay.
And I was hoping that the mother would do something. Now, this is the real question I wanted to ask you. This is more of a technical thing. This is actually more of a script thing.
Yeah.
So eventually, for those who haven't seen the movie, shit gets really bad. Really, really bad. To where, imminent death is pretty much, at least if it's not facing everybody all at once, you have a daughter that instinctively knows that something's wrong.
Yeah.
You have a father that definitely knows that something's wrong. And you have a mother that is I don't really know what's going on.
It feels
here.
Like she's come back around. Like she was the one first who's like, this is bad. And then everyone convinced her it's not. So now she is the one okay, yeah, everything's fine now.
Right, which is
and
no
when the daughter's
fault,
being like, "I'm worried," she's like, "Stop worrying." Like,
which is fine. No fault of hers. No, it's the fault of the guy that knows that they're about to be killed.
Yes, if you find a dead kid, wake your wife up and tell her that part, but be like, "Do not freak out, but we gotta go. This is why."
Lead with the tongueless dead kid in the pool. Right. Yeah, lead with that. Or
there's a part where I'm like, I understand you don't want her flipping out.
Lead with the fact that you found your daughter laying next to the naked Dutchman,
right?
As opposed to the Flying Dutchman. But this is like, this is a reason to leave. But he didn't even tell her that part. But then again,
well, she found her.
Oh, she. Yeah, that's. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're right. And and again, I'm not placing blame, but it just makes me ask the question. She was in the shower at one point when we're assuming that Patrick came into the bathroom, yes, while she was showering. And she doesn't say anything. And she also doesn't say anything. Like, why didn't she lead with that? Why didn't he lead? Now, I'm going to excuse her.
Yeah.
Because what he knows is way worse than what she saw. Right. And what she saw wasn't good. But what he knows is that we're about to be murdered.
Wait, what'd she see?
Well, just the nakedness and the having him come into the bathroom.
Yeah, just kind of everything feels weird. I loved that when she was in the shower, like, that scene was so good because I do feel like a person, because she's in the shower, she hears someone come in and pee, and then like you hear someone brushing their teeth, and then it gets like really fucking close, but she just absolutely freezes. Like, there is, and I could see being in that scenario where you're like, okay, I can't do anything, because any change in behavior then signifies to that person, maybe I'm here. She's like, maybe he just thinks the water's running and no one's in here, but if she turns that water off, then total, you know, it's like an animal. If you're like,
yeah,
it's like when something all of a sudden goes quiet, my cat's like, what the fuck's going on?
Right. Yes. Yes. No. And as far as just some technical filmmaking, very well done.
Yeah.
Because we don't
just
see
stay
him
on
at
her.
All.
No, just yeah. her. Maybe we get like the shadow and the light, like as he kind of blocks out the light. No, yeah. He's just like standing next to the shower door.
It's creepy and it's great. And here's the thing. The beauty of this movie is things that are egregiously bad, but done in such a way where it's kind of like, well, maybe they didn't really mean it. Like, maybe it's not that. Maybe,
right. It's
maybe
his bathroom.
I'm being oversensitive.
His bathroom. He's, you know, he didn't come in the shower. He didn't talk to me. He didn't poke his head in.
Right.
He's just brushing his teeth, getting ready for bed.
Right. So it does a great job of
European.
Doing things.
Who
right.
knows what those people do?
That's our excuse for everything. Everything.
Like, yeah. As an American watching that, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It could literally be like a Shinto, like religious ceremony. Asian as all get out will be like, well, probably European. But that's why it's different. And I don't understand it. But so things are horrible. Now, my question was, when things, now that the audience knows, if they haven't seen this movie, which I hope that most of them do, that eventually see it, because it's a really compelling movie. And by the way, if you're a freak about the gore, don't worry. You're fine. You're totally fine.
Like a second of gore.
What's that?
It's like a second of gore.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It's the payoff.
Right, yeah. You'll be waiting for some gore. You'll be begging for it. So the thing is, there is a moment where this movie reaches like a fever pitch of do something now or don't do it ever, or you'll never get the chance again. Were you watching it and being like, even if I'm not a trained fighter, I'd be reaching forward and clawing out eyes.
Oh, my God.
I'd be biting throats. I'd be doing whatever I could do.
The second my kid's removed from the car, I don't fucking care anymore.
Right. Right.
Like, this is it.
Yes, because it's not going to get any worse than that.
No, like, what else do I have to lose?
Keep the kid from being kidnapped, even if they've gotten their tongue cut out, which is what happens.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to tell you this right now, and I hate to admit this, because I love to be hardcore and everything. I think they could have gone a lot harder with that tongue cutting, and they didn't, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
No, I'm okay with that.
They showed you what you need to show. Well, it's even worse because, again, I knew, you know this is a horror movie, right? Yeah. Like, I didn't watch this going like, oh, fun drama of two, you know, couples getting together. I mean, they even do a great job of, like, there's a part where he's just, like, walking around his office and the fucking score is just this, like, death. Yes. So, it's, you know, and that is, like, kind of funny, but it's a great way to just set up this, like, oh, God. Like, you're just waiting.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's no, you know, it's not like, oh, you walk in, the guy's got a bunch of guns or a big sword on the wall or something, you know. There's like no danger. And so you're just waiting for it. And it's such like a benign line where they're, the two ladies are working in the garden. And Dutch lady's name? I can't think. Karen.
Yeah.
Karen's like, says something about the scissors and how dull they are. And I was like, fuck.
Right.
Those are coming back into play in some way. And man, when she pulls those out in the car, now you know as they're fucking cutting off the daughter's tongue that they're dull too.
Yeah.
Like, such a, like, the most gruesome detail that it's just, they don't hit you over the head with it. It's just this little thing in your head while you're watching this horrific thing. And then your brain goes, yeah, and they're dull. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Yes. And for those of you out there, and by that I mean all of you who have bitten your tongue before, it's sensitive.
I know. I've got like one little like inflamed taste bud this morning. I was like, this is hell.
You know what?
This is hell.
My dad pops those with tweezers.
I cut them off with toenail clippers.
Shit. Do you really? Doesn't that hurt like fuck?
For like a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, that goes away.
But either way, get a slice through a full
tongue.
You don't
want to get a bunch of them. That's the thing. You got to really carefully get that sucker in there.
I'm going to give you a doctorate for that, by the way. Like, just you've been able to isolate a taste bud. Like, that qualifies for me. But it's got to hurt like absolute hell. But you make a great point. To me, that point is undeniable. Yes, there is a point where Bjorn only is the only one that knows what could happen, and the wife is kind of oblivious, not any fault of her own. But yeah, when somebody is grabbing the child out of the car, you are grabbing and ripping off balls. You are eye gouging. You are throat biting. You are doing everything you can.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just kind of let it go, which I think has to happen because the whole movie is centered on the fact that, you know, if you don't do anything, then somebody's doing it to you because they can, which leads us up to that great line.
Yes, the line. And yeah, this was I think that's what hit the hardest for me. And it's a very similar line to in The Strangers where they're like, why are you doing this? And they say, because you were home. That's like scary, right? Like, oh, my God. Yeah, just because of the off chance I was here, this happened to me. In this movie, it is a billion times worse because it's not like, why are you doing this? Because you were there. He says, because you let me.
Yeah.
You fucking did absolutely nothing to stop this.
Yeah.
I've almost given you every chance.
Right. Right.
Like the point when Patrick, like at the end, they're all in the car because they again are, after he finds a dead kid and he's like, we got to get out of here. And I do kind of like, he's, you know, super paranoid as he's driving. And as a car comes up behind him, he's like, I'm going to shake this car. I'm going to take this weird turn, which then puts him into a shittier situation.
Right.
A turn he did not need to take that takes him into a worse situation, which, of course, Patrick's been following them. And he, you know, so now the wife thinks that Bjorn has called them to come get them. So they're all in the car together.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a babysitter that's introduced who we now know is their accomplice in their kidnappings.
Yeah.
And there's a part where Patrick gets out of the car and you see Bjorn look over at the car keys and you're like, this is it. This is the moment where he's like, I'm getting us out of here.
He's far enough away. Patrick is far enough away.
So far away.
You could undo your seatbelt, hop
out.
Over.
Get out and run around the car.
Yes, you could do that.
So
yes.
Far away.
Before he, yes. And you know what? Maybe it's up. Maybe you have to turn around and be like, honey, claw that bitch's eyes out.
Right.
You know, or she's just going to pick up on that. But you either drive away or you drive into him.
Into him.
One way or the other. But that was the quintessential moment where it's like, if you will forgive everything else.
Yep.
The fact that you haven't acted before now is fine. But my God, you're staring at a keychain of.
And this is after they've taken the kid, too.
Yes.
Your kid's gone.
Yeah. And yes. Yeah, and all you've got to do.
Shoes. These are people of wooden shoes.
Right. Exactly. They haven't figured out arches yet. Supportive arches. You can kill them. And that was the thing that I loved about it. It's not like, other than disposition.
Wait, I will say quickly, wooden shoes, not as uncomfortable as you'd think.
Really? Yeah. Have you tried some?
I have.
Okay.
They had to take two fucking downed logs to make mine, but.
But I'll tell you this.
Some redwoods.
But there's that. Worth it, though, you know. But the thing is, that's what I love about this couple. It's not like they are so intimidating that they're unable to overtake.
Right.
Like, they didn't come up with two people, male and female, that are so massive that it's like, well, we can't even try.
Right.
There's nothing special about them at all.
Nope.
Maybe their nipples aren't in their armpits, but maybe that's your secret weapon. Who knows?
Patrick's obviously in better shape than Bjorn.
But you know what? He's not in better shape than the fucking car that you could run into him if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So they were given every single chance. And even up until this is, you would think nothing would be worse than somebody taking away your child, and you'd be right. But if they did take away your child, and now for all you know, your child could be dead.
Yeah.
You don't know. I mean, Bjorn probably has a better idea of what's probably going to be her fate, but you don't really know. And then this couple that has you captive tells you to take your clothes off. I'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Yeah. What? Go ahead and take them. Because maybe in the struggle, I'll kill you.
But, well, because they're still in this weird trusting mode, because when Patrick comes to pick Bjorn up after he's already picked up the wife and kid.
Yeah.
And obviously the wife doesn't know. And Patrick gets out of the car and you can hear him be like, thank you so much for calling me and meeting me on the road. Like you said, you know, so the wife can hear that. Right. And Bjorn's like, please don't hurt my family. And he's like, if you do what I say, we won't. So you're like, I guess I just have to keep going along with what he says in order to keep my family safe, other than maybe this guy's a liar.
Yeah, right.
Maybe the guy who's kidnapped a wall full of children.
Right. Maybe the fact that when they took my daughter, they cut her tongue out. Maybe when they ask me to strip naked and walk down into the bottom of a quarry, maybe it's all just a, like, gotcha.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know.
You pass the test.
Yeah, your daughter will learn to text and write. It's fine. But now that is one thing. As I was telling people about this movie, that was one thing. Now, this is a little suspension of disbelief, but people brought that up. They're like, what, that daughter's never going to learn how to text or write to tell somebody that her parents are murderers?
Yeah.
It's a valid point. It's all the way at the end of the movie. Yeah.
Also, so, I killed the kid before you. If you do that, I'll kill you.
Well, there is
As a kid, you go, okay, I won't do that.
And maybe they tell him that right from the very beginning.
Right.
You know? Yeah, that's true. That's true. Good point. But here's the thing, though. Now, I'm going to go to the bathroom one last, final last time. But I'm going to leave you with a very, 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 this is an excellent question, though. And that is, and this might be, I don't think it's the biggest question of this movie, but I think it's an important one. So what are we led to believe then as audience members? These people are just serial killers and they're going to that much trouble just to have their own victims? Is there's nothing implied that like they're trying to find a child of their own or they weren't able to conceive or
whatever. They seem to have no issue.
So what do you think drives these people, unless they're just supposed to be evil?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. They're just kind of crazy people. Like they show absolutely no remorse to what they're doing. They seem very comfortable with it. They never worry about giving their hand away. Like the barn where Bjorn finds all the photos of all the families and the children before, there's a possibility I'm forgetting something, but it doesn't feel like that building is secured very well. Because Bjorn's looking into it on their first night. So, yeah, like these people just seem like, and it might be a thing where they've done it so many times, they're just comfortable in doing it. But you also have to wonder, because when Abel is killed, it's, you know, he's kind of, he does this kind of whine at night. So there's a part of you that's like, oh, is he killed because they're just like, this kid's annoying, let's get rid of him and move on. But why have the family there? You know, it seems like they're ready to take that girl.
Yeah.
So it's like, was that always the plan? Like, kill the kid that night and take the new girl? Like, how often? I mean, they're obviously doing it a lot. Like, there are a lot of photos in that barn. And they have a very set routine, because at the very end of the movie, they're driving back. It looks like they're driving back into Tuscany.
Right.
With the girl to probably pick a new victim or whatever.
Absolutely. And that's...
How many times do they go? Are they able to find someone every time?
And that's what I love about how gradual, in looking back over the movie, everything is. Because there's that great scene where the Dutch wife or mother starts, like, just... ordering the Agnes, the Danish girl, around, kind of like she's already theirs.
Right.
And it's because she might as well be, because they
she's going to be tomorrow. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I love that about it. And I love that in retrospect. And so,
I didn't, at no point was I like, oh, they just cycle through kids.
Right.
They just seem like weird people, and you know something bad's going to happen.
Right.
I did not predict what did happen.
And I guess that part of me was just thinking, like, that it seemed a little, like, because there is no, like, specific gain. Like, when that kidnapper guy, kidnapper / babysitter showed up, you kind of wonder to yourself, like, oh, is this going to be like they're going to sell them into some sort of slavery or something like that? Like, this is how they make their money. But it isn't. It isn't that at all. So there's no real, like, financial gain. So when you realize that they're just doing this because it's what they do, it seems a little like, God, would anybody go to that much trouble, you know, to do this? But I don't think that when somebody is a serial killer, in my limited non-expert knowledge, I don't think they're doing it as some sort of gain to, like, rise up the societal ladder of serial killers.
Right.
I think they're doing it because of the thrill, the whatever they get out of it. It's because it's the same reason why almost inevitably serial killers will keep some sort of token from their victims, even though that's the dumbest thing in the world to
right,
do.
Yeah.
But they have to do it because that's the thrill of it, making it to do the thing, to make it real, to be able to remember it. And yeah, maybe that's what these people are. They're just like,
yeah, it's almost like it's not an inherent need to kill, but a society tells me I shouldn't.
Right.
So I'm going to show society a thing or two.
Right. Exactly.
I wonder why all serial killers are male. I don't know. We'll never know.
not all, but
I love it. Not all. Mostly. I'm sure you could find the one woman and be like, see, both sides. We should talk a little bit about the quarry scene, though, before we wrap it up here, because we got to wrap it up. Because we did talk, they're forced to strip naked in the middle of the road, and then they're just kind of like shoved down into this quarry that we saw earlier, that Patrick took Bjorn to earlier in the day, in this great, like, bonding moment, like, where Bjorn reveals that he's just like, I don't like the person I've become. Like, I feel weak. And, you know, and Patrick's like, come on, let's go out here. Just fucking scream. Let's be primal. And then they're like the best. They're like best friends after that.
Yeah.
He really preys on that kind of, like, need to be a man. You know what I'm saying? So then at the end, they're just fucking done. They're just standing there whimpering to each other. And you're just like, oh, I guess what? It's still, you're like, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no clue. And then all of a sudden, there's kind of this crack. Like, you don't even know what it is. Like, you think maybe it's a gunshot. Like, I thought it was a gunshot at first.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy fuck, expecting. They shot Louise in the head.
Yeah.
And then she, like, stands back up and is okay. And then another one hits. And then you realize they're just fucking chucking rocks at them.
Right.
These giant, like, limestone rocks. To where the fucking last one is, where they're now just, like, they essentially just stand there and take it.
Yeah.
To where they're just laying there in each other's arms.
Right.
As these rocks rain down on great effects, as, like, the fucking rocks hit and leave these huge bruises and stuff. And then, yeah, we get a nice wide shot of the Dutch couple, and he's just got one big one. And it's just like,
yeah, it's like the old couple snuggling in Titanic, but have being stoned to death.
Yes, exactly. So, it is that.
And that's what the director said about that was that, you know, for all of this movie to build up to that moment, like just a gunshot, which is what I was expecting.
Yeah.
You know, a gunshot or something like that, a knife or whatever, was just too like a pedestrian. Like they needed something literally biblical. So they got it. And they went with the stoning and it works perfectly because, yeah, that first one, even in that moment, almost because it's the stoning, you're like, there's still a chance. Like, you can still get away,
right?
But they just stand there and get stoned to death. And it's like, well, I give up.
Yeah.
Like,
it, you know, out of context, that sounds awesome. That's what I plan on doing tonight at Fish. now I got to drive.
Yes. But
so not to death. I will be stoned.
Yeah, right. But but no, they take it that much further.
That's been the great, like, watching this movie is like, I'm so glad Fish was this weekend because it's just giving me something to, like, focus positively on.
Well, and let's just talk for 2 seconds about that quickly because this is kind of fun. You had messaged me about, and I don't remember what the word was, that you had said it was the most, I don't know if it was unsettling, upsetting, uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think, yeah, something, yeah, unsettling.
I mean, it was like the most that you said of some feeling, of some negative feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, shit, I can't wait to watch this movie. And I watched it and loved every second of it. And that doesn't mean like, it's not about being less scared.
I said upsetting.
Upsetting.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that what happens in it isn't upsetting, but what I was really excited for was that, like I've said from a million episodes ago, these psychological horror movies are the ones that really fuck with me, that really stick with me, that really bother me, and because I internalize it. But now I think I've seen enough of them to where I can just sit back and enjoy the movie making.
Yeah.
It's not to say that I wasn't affected by what happened, but I think that I found this movie to be really engaging.
Yeah.
Really well made, well written, well acted. Every single aspect of filmmaking is all those boxes are checked.
Yeah.
And that we got something ultimately that ended up being pretty unique, which, like we've said before, in the horror world is a pretty tall order.
Yeah.
So we've got a, hey, it's your fault. We got a, hey, it's nobody knows where these countries really are. Hey, we got a, like, essentially a 92% drama built into what ultimately, like, culminated in a really upsetting climax. And so I just really was enjoying some fucking phenomenal filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I mean, oddly enough, the upsetting part of it was why they didn't do anything, like that part where I'm just like, fucking do something like
right.
that. I don't know. It was, you know, it was just all the dread and then just feeling so, like, as the viewer, you feel powerless.
Yeah.
And where you want to just fucking grab them and shake them and be like, fucking do something.
Right.
You're running out of chances.
Yes.
I don't want to have to watch you not do anything.
Yeah. Wear a mask. I mean, anything, whatever. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
No, that was good. That was good and relevant. It fit perfectly.
No, I'm kidding. But no, you're right. Like, this is, but here, but listen to what you just said and what I just felt. And I think everybody would just feel up by watching this movie. The funny thing is that we've said this before in any other slasher we've ever seen. You have people yelling, like, don't open that door. Don't go outside. Right. Don't go swimming at 11:30 at night in black water. Like, we're all used to saying that, but there's something that this movie does that somehow, like, just elevates that completely.
Yeah.
And is just like, I don't care what happens. I don't know. Maybe it's all the realism that they built up with the drama beforehand. Maybe that's what makes it different than a Friday the 13th where somebody makes a dumb decision to do something in the dark or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe those things to us are just silly and part of the genre, but this really feels like it's presented in such a real way that it's like, no, you can't do that. Like, you got to get the fuck out of there. That maybe that, and that's the achievement of the movie, that I hate to say this. I literally came out of my mouth. Elevated itself above the sort of fun and carnival-esque aspect of like more cheap thrill movies.
Yeah.
To where it's like, no, this shit's real. Like, you have a daughter, like, she's great and a promising dancer from everything that we can tell.
Yeah.
Like, and yet you're still letting this happen to you. That just shows those, you know, and it's funny, it's kind of reverse stakes, because I always talk about how the stakes in horror movies coincide with youth, but this is more like you're in charge of, like, you're supposed to be the ones to figure something out.
Yeah.
You're the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing, and I don't want to dwell on that because I feel like we've gone far enough, but I did really find it interesting, the sex scene in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because it does take place after what, at least up until that point, is the most egregious, like, infringement on their privacy or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, so I thought it was interesting, but there's something kind of human about it. So I don't know if that was kind of a nod to humans' attraction to danger.
Yeah.
That maybe that, you know, like, you're taking a shower, some strange man comes into the room, you're really fucking pissed and really fucking violated, but it kind of makes you a little horny. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question, but it's so beautiful.
Was that after that?
Yeah. But it's right after she comes into the room after taking the shower.
Oh, okay.
But it's so beautifully used as an argument by the Dutch couple when they're like, where were you? What were you doing when
your daughter? Yeah, she's like, my daughter was in your bed while you were naked. And they were like, yeah, she was calling for you and you didn't come get her. What were you doing?
Right.
Which they know what they were doing.
Right, exactly.
Patrick's fucking watching them.
Right, exactly. But
you don't have want to be like, whoa, we were really in the moment. You guys know what that's like, right? You ignore your kids every once in a while. They'll be fine for 5 minutes.
Right, exactly. And so, no, that's the great part about the movie is that it. And so what happens to you as a viewer is sort of a microcosm of the same thing that's happening to the characters, where it's like, maybe it's fine. Like, maybe it's okay. Let's not overreact here. You know, yeah, she's crying at the door, but we're banging and it's feeling good. And like, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And the whole point of the movie is sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's not fine.
Also, the little girl is just like, oh, I guess the naked host is taking me into his bed. I'm just going to go to sleep now.
The Dutch are different. They are. You know, it's funny. I have business dealings with the Dutch.
Yeah.
And they are, they, we'll talk about it after the
show.
Some more
anecdotal evidence, Tim. Tell me about the Dutch as a whole.
The Dutch are very welcoming of other Dutch people in their business interactions. And they are also very wise and conservative with their expenditures.
Okay.
So that's that, but hey, like, they make a lot of cheese.
They do.
Yeah.
They're on the forefront of becoming the next cheese. Well, he says they export the most cheese outside of Germany.
Outside of Germany. Yeah.
Which still, you don't know German cheese.
No. What's German cheese?
Yeah, wouldn't the argument then be like, well, I don't think that's a good metric because no one knows about German cheese. And if they're number one, who cares?
I know Schuller's bar cheese that has the horseradish like fluorescent orange. Oh, please. Fuck yes. Yeah.
I'll eat a tub of that.
Yes.
Oh, man. My parents had like parties and they'd set that out. And I'm just like, it's so this is going to be good, gone, dude. Guys. Sorry.
Right. It's so good. So Dr. Renault, tell us more about German cheese when you get the chance, or Dutch cheese for that matter, because you're going to know more than we are. That's for sure. So,
do you recommend this movie, Tim?
Absolutely. And I've not only, I don't recommend it just into the ether. I have recommended this to several people since I watched it.
Nice.
Told people that don't even like horror movies, like, you should really check out this movie. A lot of which is because I think it's not that it needs this to be as a selling point, but I think the cultural thing is kind of neat.
Yeah.
I think that aspect of it is kind of cool. So, fuck yeah, I literally have recommended this to people.
All right. I also recommend this movie because it is very well made. It is very compelling. It will get a reaction out of you no matter what.
Yes.
But, you know, it's a movie I'm smart enough where I'm like, Nancy, do not watch this movie. I'm like, I don't even want to tell you about this movie. She did make me tell her about it, but I'm like,
see, I think she'd like it in a way.
Fuck no.
Not the last 15
Dude,
minutes. Not
no,
the last
she wouldn't
15
like
minutes.
Any of it because she would be like me. She would know it's a horror movie. Like, she would hate that anticipation. Hate
you don't,
it.
You don't think she'd like the cultural aspect?
Are you kidding me? No. What? No.
Yeah.
She likes Iceland.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
If it were... She'll watch Lamb all day long.
Right. We got to, like the animal?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Movie, yeah.
Yeah. No, I.
Where a couple steals a child from its rightful parent.
Oh, I thought you meant like she'll just watch like Lamb, like just
Lamb
pasture.
Videos.
Yeah.
10 hours of lambs frolicking. That she would love.
Yeah. Right.
She would watch that. But no, yeah, this is a movie I was like, you don't want anything to do with this. But yes, I would definitely recommend it for people who like movies.
I don't know what the triggers are. Tongue trauma.
Kids. Any kid in danger. Yeah. She's not going to like that.
Confusion about.
I could recommend this to my neighbor. No animals are hurt. She'll be like, cool. As long as a dog's not killed, I don't care how many kids are killed.
That's true. Good point. No, but I do strong. I think there
I should
is,
say friend.
There is
when I say neighbor.
There is a strong, there is a strong bit of filmmaking going on here, and it's great.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
Well,
all right.
We got something special here, don't we?
So yeah, this is it. So we're down to two on the Evil Dice Tonight list, and we made the bold decision. We were like, what if? As we get down the list, we get to the last two, and then the last one, we never cover. Just, we let ran it. We got a 1 out of 20 chance of never covering one of these movies, and it's down to two. So we're going to flip a coin. The one we get, heads is going to be this one. Tails is going to be this one. The one we don't get, buried forever. Gone. We'll let you know what it is so that you know we'll never cover it.
Okay.
Should we?
Well, should we tell them both? So
well,
they
know
they'll what know
if
are?
We say, okay, next week we're covering this, and then we'll never cover this. I mean, they'll know what both of them are.
Yeah. Well, should we just say? Should we tell them now so that they're?
I mean, I think there's a part of like
they're hoping for.
If
it?
We don't say, then we could just do it when. Like, who would know if we actually did do it again?
I think
there's a kind of finality to it. If we're like, this is the title, then they'll know. Then if we do it, they're like, what liars?
Yeah. Okay. I like it.
Okay. So Tim's got a coin.
Now, here's let's
goodbye Dice Tower. We're retiring you until I don't know, maybe we'll do this again. Yeah.
So let me ask you this.
Maybe we'll pick five next time.
the intricacies of the coin toss, should I toss it, catch it, then flip it?
You can do it however you want. You can let it drop. Just as whenever the coin stops and I see it, that's it.
Okay.
You can spin it. I don't care.
I'm gonna try to flip it, catch it, and slap it.
All right, let's go.
Okay.
You have to flip it.
Right.
That literally just went straight up in the air. How did you do that?
I have no idea.
Okay, let's try that.
Okay. This is the answer right here.
All right.
What do we got? I feel like it's a heads.
Oh, my God. It's one of those weird. No, it's tails.
Oh, it is.
It's one of those weird state quarters. This was, what state quarter? This is the important part. This is... I can't even read this. I don't care. Okay, Tim. Should we say what we're doing next week or what we're burying forever?
Both.
What should we say first?
Let's say what we're doing next week.
Okay. So next week, please join us from 2016, another foreign film. This one French, I believe.
Yes.
We're going to get cooking on this one. It's Raw from 2016. Excited about Raw. I am sad to say, as we lay to rest.
Oh, shit.
He broke onto the scene with an amazing movie that swept the nation. People compared him to the next, they called him the next Spielberg, a monumental film from 1999, The Sixth Sense, Buried Forever.
We will.
By Bruce Willis.
One of the most popular, one of the most, and really, if you think about it, in modern times, in modern pop culture, one of the most popular and referenced lines.
Oh, absolutely.
Since like fucking whatever. I mean, it ranks up there with like lines from like Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars or whatever.
Yeah.
So we will never.
We've already talked too much about it, though.
We will never get. Yeah. That it could remind people it is the movie called
The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense.
Yeah. As we shovel dirt onto
some people
it.
Are fucking pissed right now because there are a lot of people that love that movie.
I love that movie. I was like, please let it be some cheerleader camp.
I got
But no, we got close. I got so close to burying cheerleader camp forever.
God, thank God we got Terror Vision out there. And we traded in The Sixth Sense for Terror Vision.
Yeah. But you know what? That's what makes the horror genre fun.
Yes. And Chance, for that matter. So,
Goodbye, Sixth Sense. Hello, Raw.
Yeah.
Excited next week.
Ooh, Raw.
2016 Raw. Check out our website, slumberpodcastmassacre.com. Shoot us an email, slumberpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our amazing and active social media. Huge thanks to our patrons. You help make this show possible. Thank you so much. We couldn't do it without you. Tim, do you got anything else to say about Speak No Evil? A movie we spoke a lot about.
We did. We
holy shit.
Where are we at?
215.
Holy fuck. Okay. In that case, no, but I will say this though. Look, anybody can listen to the show in any way that they want to. And I know that with some of these unknown movies that maybe it's a little bit to ask, but I have seen Raw.
I have not.
I really, really like this movie. So if you can handle subtitles, if you can handle foreign language, and trust me, it's very watchable. I am just going to ask our listening audience to please watch Raw before they listen to the next episode.
Yeah.
Like make that your homework for the week. Watch Raw, write down your thoughts, and then that way you can get so much more out of our episode.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask you that.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I'm going to demand it as a man. No, I'm not.
Real men watch the movies before they listen to the podcast. Don't be some little F word.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it, Tim.
Yeah. Bye.